Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
There were a number of anti-Semitic attacks in Athens, one of them at a kosher restaurant, graffiti, anti-Semitic graffiti, and the mayor there is a guy by the name of Haris Dukas, who is the mayor of Athens. Sunday, he responded to criticism from Israel's chief diplomat to the country, Ambassador Noam Katz. And this is what he said in an interview with a Greek newspaper. Katz said that anti-Semitic vandalism in Athens had generated concerns amongst Israeli tourists. He charged that Dukas, a member of the socialist PASOK, P-A-S-O-K party, had failed to counter the organized groups responsible for the hateful graffiti. In one example, on July the 12th, six individuals entered an Israeli restaurant in Athens, sprayed black paint on the walls and tables. They dropped pamphlets. They spray painted slogans such as "No Zionist is safe here," posted a sign on one of the restaurant windows that said "All IDF soldiers are war criminals. We don't want you here." And so it went on. Dukas, the mayor, pushed back and he said, "We do not accept lessons in democracy from those who kill civilians." This is what he wrote on X. He is, as I said, the mayor of Athens and effectively saying it's a free-for-all. You can really do whatever you want when it comes to Israelis, when it comes to Jews, because we won't. In other words, everything you say is disqualified. So how's that for a powerful way to completely other and silence people? I mentioned earlier Reddy Klabi in the United States, working for wherever she works for. But she retweeted that and said, "Yes!" exclamation mark. In other words, it's actually quite okay to silence Jews because we've decided on a reason, and that is where we are. That is what that is about. So very, very dangerous and concerning in Athens. Hostage videos, we were talking about those earlier as well. The way in which this has all been portrayed is very dangerous. They're manipulative. They are designed as to inflict as much damage as possible. Joining me to unpack this further is Eli Cohen. He's a journalist, he's an author, and he's written extensively about media ethics. Eli, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us once again. What makes a hostage video such an effective propaganda tool?
I mean, it's obvious. You're talking about somebody who's in dire straits, and there's, you know, automatically a lot of sympathy for a person like in that situation. And it hits, you know, raw nerves. So obviously those kind of videos are extremely powerful.
But yet somehow it only hurts the people it's designed to hurt. That's what I found so interesting, is that it has hardly any impact on those who hate Israel and those who are doing their best to work against it.
Well, that's we have to understand there's something going on right now, okay? And it's not happenstance, it's not occurring by accident. There is a very well-funded, therefore very well thought out campaign against Israel and Jews. And the agents of this, which are, if we trace where the funding is coming from, it's very likely coming from Qatar, maybe still from Iran, although I think their pockets are pretty empty by now. But and it's coming from this whole network of anti-Israel and anti-Jewish things, including funds from the United States. And you know, they've created a narrative and they're pumping it through different channels. And when you have latent anti-Semitism, they're very happy to pick up on that as well. And that's what's made this so powerful. So when people are already galvanized And when they're already part of the let's say part of the vehicle of a demonized Israel and a demonized Jew, the facts and the things that should create sympathy for other things are just are not doing anything.
Why do you think it is, or how do you think it's possible that journalists around the world get this news, see these videos, and then choose to filter it out of their publication? How have they reached this point?
I think if we analyze, okay, if we look back to a lot of the major news services, okay, if we take a look back, not the past 2 years, if we look back 5 years, 10 years even, we see that they're already radicalized, whether it's their editors, whether it's their journalists. You know, a case in point is a good case in point, like is the BBC, which has been anti-Israel and bordering on anti-Semitic even for many, many years, and it hasn't been taken care of at all. They keep rebuffing any efforts to try and really make any changes there. You take a look, for example, at the Wall Street Journal, okay, which is probably one of the best independent news sources, and you see that they don't pump out that kind of stuff. You take a look at Fox News, for example, you can see that they are completely not on the side of that
narrative.
Demonic narratives. And so, you know, it's a question of you know, inside a lot of journalistic empires, you usually have some kind of pecking order too. Okay, the problem, you know, for Israel, unfortunately, is that you also have anti-Israel news sources inside of Israel. For example, Haaretz and their various newspapers are anti-Israel, even bordering on anti-Semitic sometimes, and they're considered an Israeli media, and they're totally pumping out all these fake narratives and lies and all that kind of stuff too. So, you know, when we take a look at media and expect them to be, you know, objective reporters of news, that's not been the case for a long time. They're actually basically purveyors of a very certain guidelines and narratives, and that's why when things come up that they can, you know, just continue to report as is, because they suit their narrative, they'll get publicized. And the other things that don't fit in with their narrative just don't make it to their pages, or, you know, whatever form that they're broadcasting in.
It's just remarkable how ethically they have and what cognitive dissonance they must use in order to ignore stories like this. The last question is,
I don't think it's cognitive dissonance in this case. I think it's just a basic inherent kind of lack of integrity.
Do you think there's hope for media?
First of all, media is kind of falling apart. Is in a big disarray. You know, the New York Times, which is also basically anti-Israel and even anti-Semitic at some points, even though it's, you know, it American and was founded by Jews and has got a lot of Jews working there, is it doesn't have the same influence that it used to have. You know, and the disarray, the spreading of media as electronic media. But, you know, one of the things that I think is propping things up and propelling things forward, alas, is the power of social media today, which is, you know, which is trumpeting and rebroadcasting and retweeting everything, all this kind of poison. And that's what's actually poisoning the masses now. It's even a lot less, the local news hours and all that, whose coverage is a lot less than it used to be.
That is all we have time for. Eli Cohen, thank you as always. Trying to unpack this, it's one of the most challenging conversations, certainly that, or one of the most challenging issues that I have found during this war, because I can't actually figure out how we have got to the point that people are called to a video of a starving man being forced to dig their own grave. How did we get here that South African news barely even is able to mention it?